Hey everybody, listen up. We moved the video show to a brand new channel. That's right, we decided after a long time that the podcast videos and the car review videos probably shouldn't be on the same channel. So we took all the podcast videos off that channel and made a new channel called The Smoking Tire Podcast. That's right. Audio versions of the podcast, wherever you listen, your iTunes, your Google Play Music, wherever it is you get the podcast from an audio standpoint, will remain exactly the same. But going forward, video versions of the podcast, both recorded and live streamed, will be exclusively on our new channel, The Smoking Tire Podcast. So like, subscribe, and follow us over there if you want to get the Smoking Tire Podcast on video. This episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by Honey. Look, we all shop online, and especially over the last 3 months, we're shopping pretty much exclusively online. And when you go to checkout, we've all seen the promo code field there, and it's staring at us, and you're just going, man, I wish I had a promo code to type in there. And when you don't, you're like, oh, I'm really missing out there. But thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is a free browser extension that finds promo codes for you and then automatically applies them to your cart. Imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites, okay? Like I recently used it to save money at Nordstrom. When you check out, okay, the Honey button just drops down. You just click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds for all those working coupons for that site, and then like prices drop. My wife, she buys pretty much all her clothes at Nordstrom.com. She has this habit of ordering all the things and then trying them on at home and bringing back what she doesn't wear. It's like you know, try at home kind of thing, right? And on a recent purchase, she saved over $65 on clothes. It was great. She got a new job, so she's really stocking up at Nordstrom. And Honey saved us over $65 in just one purchase. We didn't have to do anything. Honey's found its 17 million members over $2 billion in savings from over 30,000 stores online. If you don't already have Honey, you are straight up missing out on free money. It's a free download and installs in just a few seconds, and by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/tire. That's joinhoney, J-O-I-N, honey.com/tire. One more time, joinhoney.com/tire. And we're also brought to you by autotempest.com. Look, guys, time is money. Whether you make a little money or a lot of money, if you can save time, you're saving money. And when you're going to look for a used car, it's so much of it is a waste of time because you have to do the same thing over and over. Type those same search criteria into a million different search engines for cars. Autotempest.com is here for you. It takes all that work and puts it into one place for you, right? You just go to autotempest.com, type in your year, make, and model, your zip code, and how far away you want to look, and it searches all those other sites for you. Talking about cars.com, CarSoup, Cars Direct, Craigslist, eBay Motors, Facebook Marketplace, you name it. Okay, autotempest.com is going to do that searching for you. It's free. They don't keep your data. Okay, they don't harvest it up. It's a real, real mensch of them to support this podcast for so many years. All you got to do when you're looking for a car, just start at autotempest.com. If you don't save money, you might be doing it wrong. But if you save time, you're going to be saving time. And time equals money at autotempest.com. Use it, folks. Alrighty then, on this episode of the show, my old friend Freddie Hernandez, aka Tavarish, from down in Florida. Man, this guy finds Project Car Gold. He is a really interesting dude. His hustle is extremely strong. He's always wrenching. He's always filming. He's always making new content. And I'm always interested in what type of terrible vehicles he's buying in order to try and squeeze those views out of them. It's a good game. You can't hate the player. You've got to hate that game. Freddie Tavarish Hernandez on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
All right. It is the Smoking Tire Podcast on what feels like a sort of a strange day to be podcasting. This show has a bit of a slow burn. So it is June 3rd. today, and it's Wednesday, and from Sunday till really today, there's been like riots and protests all over America, and people have been not posting content as a solidarity thing. And I don't really know what to say. It feels a little awkward to do a show, because what's going on in our country seems to be like all consuming, especially like in my life, in my house, because there's helicopters hovering over my house all day. And there's curfews and all this kind of wild stuff. And at the same time, I feel like, I support the protesters for sure. I think this country's long overdue for a reckoning with its racial history. And I'm trying to not be the fucking white guy that lectures people on race. So I haven't personally said too much about it, but I'm trying to read some black authors and some scholars that I think do know a lot about the type of thing and educate myself where I can. I just discovered James Baldwin. He rules. But I don't think that it's healthy to not talk about anything else at all. And I also think that we need to keep our show going. It's our job. So here it is. It's the Smoking Tire Podcast. Despite some awkwardness for racial protests and riots happening in our country. And we're going to do the show, and we're going to keep doing the show, I think. And we were supposed to have Doug on earlier in this week, and we bumped it. It seemed at that time, it seemed like it was worse. It was worse on Monday.
Everything was bad.
And so we were like, yeah, let's not do that. So we got Freddie on the line. Tavarish is in the house,
Hello.
Hi. What's happening, buddy?
Yes, I am in my house. I'm doing pretty good. I kind of live in the middle of nowhere, so it's far removed from what's happening. But I mean, if you go on social media, you just see everything that's going on. Nothing like you. I mean, you're definitely in the midst of it. So I'm just making sure. I hope that you guys are all staying safe and whatnot. It's been crazy, but I also agree that it's good to have not necessarily escapism, but just something to take your mind off of, you know, the state of the world right now. I think that's that can help people.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there's I'm not going to be the stay in your lane, stick to cars all the time. You know, I'm going to be a human, and we're going to be a human, and we can talk about human things. But also, I think that especially during coronavirus time, which coronavirus seems like a long time ago. I don't know. This week has been so fucked up that as like social distancing. What's that? That's over. That's like
coronavirus
last
is over. I don't know if you know that,
dude.
Already. Coronavirus has not been a thing for a good week now.
So, I know I don't want to.
Glad that we cured it.
I don't want to laugh, but I did see a great tweet that was like, I can't believe coronavirus blew a 28-3 lead to racism, which is a great. It's a great tweet. It makes me feel bad to laugh at it, but it's a great tweet. Mm-hmm. But people wrote me a lot of very nice notes saying thank you for continuing to do the show, you know, during right. coronavirus while folks are stuck at home. So we're gonna do the show. And Freddie, can we talk about all the shit boxes you've been buying recently? Because
sure.
Man, your text messages are great.
So, all right. So where should I start? I recently got rid of one of the biggest piles of crap that I've ever had, which was an $11,000 Bentley Continental GT.
Didn't you get that from Hoover?
I got that from Tyler Hoover, and that needed an engine out. It needed a bunch of different things, but it ended up being not too bad after all is said and done. But the engine had to come out, so...
Yeah, I mean, being not that, too so, bad after an engine out is really saying something. Isn't one of the aren't those Bentleys like the worst engine out you could do, except for maybe a 90s Lambo?
A 90s Lambo would probably be a little bit better just because there's less stuff.
True.
It's less densely packed with stuff. So that was probably the worst car I've ever worked on, like technical wise, and also the fact that it spent 10 years in Russia, which meant that everything was just corroded and botched together and duct taped, and there's string and stuff was missing, and bolts were used and self tappers that were that didn't mean to go there. It was like the worst car ever. Like everything is like the Murphy's Law of cars, yeah. Right? So it all came together and it actually drove really nice. Got a Fab Speed exhaust on there. And the car actually, I've never driven a Bentley before. So what I didn't notice is that they are not slow. Like,
oh, yeah.
For a 6,000 pound car.
Oh, you didn't know that?
They're not that bad.
No, I think the Bentley Flying Spur was the first four-door car over 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was like 205.
It was the first four-door, yeah, first sedan to crack 200 in a Flying Spur. That's the same engine in that GT.
That's nuts.
Yeah, those things are fast as fuck, dude. Yeah, they go. You don't notice it. They hide it, but the speedometer's like, wah!
Yeah, yeah. I floored the throttle, and then I'm like, well, there's a sensation of speed here, and I look down, like, oh, crap, this is really fast. Okay, yeah. let me slow down.
It's an interesting engine. Like, I wonder if you could shove that engine into some other weird thing and make it work properly.
Something big.
Something big,
something
right?
Something huge where you can put it behind the front axle bumper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the guy that I sold my engine to is he's doing a Jaguar XJ220 kit car.
The fuck
out of here.
And he's
putting that engine
in it. That's so weird. I wonder who makes
fast.
It. I've never even who's heard of a Jaguar XJ220 kit car? I've never heard of anything like that.
Someone has made everything.
I mean, he's making
it completely, completely custom.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That's why, you know, it's one of those guys that like, you know, that guy that had the Lamborghini Countach and he built it in his basement.
Yeah.
Over 17 years.
Yeah, it was
and
gorgeous.
It was like perfect.
Yeah, dude, it was great. It was such a cool car, man.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a 220 is a good choice, right? Because, you know, you could get away with more. You could fewer people have seen a 220 and have accurate comparisons. Well, I hope that's not it. That's awful.
Oh, boy.
No, Freddie,
oh, no,
found
no,
your
no,
next
no.
car,
that,
dude.
That is,
wow.
You should race that guy to see who could do a 220 replica first.
Yes. That would be good. So I've one of my other cars is. In that same vein that you just showed. So I'll get to that. A quick 220 sort of side note. I recently went to the Amelia Island Concours. Oh, like not recently, before this whole coronavirus thing started.
Yeah, it was like the last weekend before shit got shut down.
Yeah. So it was like the last weekend. That's when we were filming Car Trek. And we went to the Amelia Island Concours and we had to we're like judging something like what's the best car that would get views on YouTube, and it's like whichever one's been on fire, right? But the car that we chose, I think out of the exotics, was like the Jaguar XJ220.
Uh-huh.
And Tyler and Ed, Tyler Hoover and Ed Bullion, they both said like, hey Freddie, you should like present this award. And me, like, I know like nothing about this car. So I'm like just making stuff up. I'm like, well, not a lot of people know that it's, you know, they thought it was a V12, but it's really a V6 and it doesn't actually do 220 miles an hour, but it does maybe 217, I think, you know. And it's just like,
well, if you were making it up,
the owner was not happy with that.
you got pretty close to the correct facts for just winging it.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is what I've heard from like old Top Gear, so I'm just kind of like going through my memory and stuff.
Well, look, the owner of that car has the last laugh, even if you were talking shit. He's got a 220.
Oh, of course. Oh yeah, it was a beautiful car, beautiful car.
Yeah, they're really, really neat. We got a friend who's got one over in England and keeps asking us to come visit and has offered the keys, but I thought this summer was going to be the summer for England and Jaguar 220s, but I don't think that's going to fly.
And of course, there's
fly.
The van.
And the van. Yeah, Freddie, this is more up your alley. Mm-hmm. The dude who takes care of all the 220s in the world, Don Law, has that Ford transit van that was the mule.
Yes.
And it's got the 220 wheels on it, which is awesome. And it's a super secret transit van that mobs And that's perfect.
So, a little thing about that van. I don't know if you guys remember on the Grand Tour. I think it was the last season. They had something on the 220, or it might have been Top Gear. I can't remember. But the last time they did something on the XJ 220, they had 220 van plates on it. And I'm guessing that they took the plates off of that van and put it on the 220. I have no idea why.
They probably did. Because I bet you Don Law just did that.
Yeah. I wonder how this would do in a race.
But it's
like
weird because it had 220 van plates and the van doesn't have 220 van plates. So I don't know.
I don't know. I bet there was, I would call it shenanigans. Yeah. I think there's shenanigans involved in that for filming. I wouldn't look too deeply into
it. Is this another of the Top Gear, you know, the 982 FKL?
Right.
Thing? Right. The Falkland Islands.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll ask Richard Porter. Richard Porter swore up and down that Falkland Islands thing was bullshit. They thought it was just a coincidence.
I sort of believe them after seeing a lot of interviews with James May and Clarkson. It seems like they didn't really give it much thought.
Yeah. It's entirely possible that you would not think of that. I know it's hard in hindsight, it's hard to admit that. But in the moment, I can absolutely understand how you wouldn't give the number plate on the used car you just bought a single fucking thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
It's a pretty big reach, I think.
All right, wait. Back to your shit boxes, Freddie. So the Bentley is the worst car ever to work on, which I understand. Density of packaging.
Right. So then I got one car that's like definitely not a shit box, though. It's my ultimate dream car, 09 Aston Martin DBS manual. So that one was, it's used. It's a driver. It has 31,000 miles or 32. But I love it. It's Casino Royale, gray and black interior, Alcantara, all that stuff. It's like the James Bond spec, but I'm not a James Bond fan. But it's the cheapest one in the country. And I just had I really, really, really wanted it. So I ended up trading a car for that plus cash. But as far as the shitbox end of the spectrum, I have a wide body Civic that was, I don't know if I can, I can't pull it up here, but Zach, maybe if you can pull it up. Back in the day, there was a meme and there was like a blue Civic that was on a grass field and it was like a 3/4 shot. And it was like, if you just look up like blue meme Civic.
It's like a crazy wide body, super quote, you know, race or whatever. It like looks like a time attack on the street kind of thing.
It is the proto racer. It is like the racer top to end of the all top, racers. Zach, it has that, like this crazy,
right,
crazy
second
wing
from the right.
And second from the right. That, like it was in a ton of that. Memes. So there's that. One that like my Honda ran out of oil called it. Yeah, there we go. That's called it fried rice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
no
exactly
oil in
it.
My Civic, called it fried rice. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the most like of the time body kit ever.
The wing goes from the rear wheel arch over the roof and connects to the other rear wheel arch. Like the Arch of St. Louis is on this car. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so if you take a look at this car, a lot of people say like, oh, well, it's like a fiberglass kit. That car is a one-off. It is a completely custom car built by a 16-year-old for like his high school career or something. So that entire kit was made out of steel. Like he made it out of metal.
What?
That's so crazy. What does this thing weigh? It's so heavy.
I don't know. It's definitely more than a Civic, than a regular Civic. It's probably another 1,000 pounds on top of whatever the Civic weighed.
So in what state of disrepair is it now? Is it fucked?
Yeah. So I found that car in a field. Actually, one of my viewers helped me find it. So I found that in a in a parking lot. Of this auto shop just in the middle of Florida, just like literally in the middle of nowhere. And it was there for 6 years and it didn't have an engine and it was just like in a really bad state of disrepair, but it still had everything, you know, has Lambo doors. It was painted red really poorly. And the bodywork was cracking because like after the metal was on, like they put a big layer of Bondo on it And what happened is like all the moisture was trapped underneath the Bondo. So it just started rusting out.
Oh my God.
So I ended up buying that car, towing it home. And that's going to be the basis for a build that I'm doing with Advanced Auto Parts. And that's going to be like a K24 swapped turbo all wheel drive.
Oh,
like,
there it is.
It's going to be, this is more like a SEMA build.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is take off all that paintwork. And since the body kit is metal, I want to get it down to the bare metal and do like a brushed metal finish. So you can see like all the work and then redo. Yeah, there we go. That's how I found it.
It's pretty fucked.
So, I gotta say though, that's a kind of cool idea.
For sure.
It is a cool idea to do it in bare metal, but you don't do you? Yeah. I thought you hate bodywork though.
I do, but I'm also trying to learn how to do more metal fabrication. So I'd like to learn how to weld a little bit better, that sort of thing. So I'm gonna redo some of the styling cues because I don't really know what a lot of that is about. So I think make it a little more aggressive, make it a little more like
more aggressive. Oh yeah. Yeah. Add some canards, just canards.
Yeah. Yeah. Canards make everything
Dude,
better.
Canards
yeah.
like everywhere.
Yeah. Cause this is kind of like, it's a little bit of rocket age, like jet age Honda Civic rally car. But if a kid made this out of metal in shop, that is impressive. Even if you don't like the way it looks, like that is a lot of work and that's an impressive endeavor.
It doesn't seem
exactly
like it's
thought,
beyond
yeah,
hope.
Because I just wanted to have more of a story. Like I love cars with stories, and I wanted to continue that story because this kid like poured his heart and soul into it.
Every one of your cars has a story, bro. You don't have no cars with no stories, bro.
Yeah, your cars have stories like a hobo has stories.
Yeah,
a traveling vagabond on a train. You know, he'll tell you a story for a
They
sandwich.
Always end up under a bridge somewhere.
Hey, you know what would be the fucking engine for that, Freddie? The engine for that you
what?
Need is that Honda V6. The Odyssey motor,
3.5.
Like we drove in the back of that psycho Mini Cooper, bro. That is what you want, and people have fit them in the front of those before. They're bitching.
So that, so I was thinking about engine swaps, and that was probably top three.
Yeah,
of what I would do with that car. So the J35 swap.
Yeah, J35. Like, do you do a full Odyssey
with a
front clip
turbo? It could do like pretty good numbers and it can be like really, really good. The problem is with the J35, the engine is very, very tall, which means that the intake manifold is sticking like a foot out of the hood. Like it is like ridiculous.
As opposed to the rest of that car, which is so subdued and classy that you couldn't possibly.
Oh no,
modify.
No, yeah, I can't ruin those lines. Okay, I can.
No, but we drove that crazy Mini. It was the J35 with a Rotrex on it, and it was spectacular. I mean, it's very rare that I drive an engine that delivers power as well as that did.
Mm-hmm.
That was bonsai.
That was a
that
special
thing.
Engine. It
yeah,
really was.
It was very good. Very good.
It's weird. It's weird that you know, the Camrys and the Honda Accords get such good engines when you put them in the right car and then you supercharge them, because like the Lotus Evora is like a really good car, and that engine is not does not feel like a Camry engine.
Bro, why isn't the TRD? Why isn't the TRD Camry? Why don't they, you know, it's like the Lotus gets the Camry engine and supercharges it. Why doesn't the TRD Camry take that Lotus engine, put it back in the Camry? With the blower on it. Wouldn't that be awesome? All-wheel drive Camry with an Evora motor? Ooh, I'm fucking fizzy thinking about that. That's bitching.
Who would buy that? I mean, first of all, you know, you're the car journalist expert, and you have more car buying advice for new cars than I would. But like, who would be the person you're selling this to?
I mean,
there's three
know.
People.
A Camry
three
with
people.
An all-wheel drive and a supercharger.
I mean, look. It would take a lot of work for a Toyota's end to brand something like that properly, but and you know, I also see opportunities in the Lexus GSF Sport for
that would
be
more
a
sense.
Ripper, yeah,
a little
yeah.
M competitor kind
of
thing.
But I think it would be fun, and it would be the kind of thing that would be like Toyota Skunk Works project. You know,
it'd be a marketing tool.
It'd be a fun marketing tool. Who's the customer? Fucking, I don't know, dude. I don't know.
People,
but the new Camrys are aggressive. They look good. Doesn't the new Camry like look sporty and good? I think it kind of does, right?
The new Camry is probably one of the best looking cars I've seen in quite a long
time. It is. It looks
and,
good.
And I remember seeing it in SEMA. I'm like, damn, that thing looks good.
It's kind of dope.
And then I looked at the price tag and I was like, holy crap, it's like 50 grand.
Yeah, I know. But when I call an Uber and it's like new Camry, I'm like, oh, sweet, the new Camry. The new Camrys mm-hmm. and the new Civics are really good Ubers. They have big back seats. But dude, I'm picturing an all-wheel drive with some nice wheels, a little more aggressive bodywork and a supercharged. That's fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, I mean, okay, cool. So
if you build it, they will
another
come.
Another one of my cars. go ahead, I'm sorry.
He's trying to turn hard left away from Camrys, like immediately.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
shitbox number three. Let's go.
Well, he's the man of orange Lamborghinis with movie stories, and we're like, what if we modified this gray Camry? what if we get Wonder Bread and then we sprinkle pepper on it?
So what's interesting is that the Lambos and stuff, like I get more enjoyment out of the cheap stuff, like way more enjoyment out of the cheap stuff than I do the expensive stuff, because I know that I can break stuff and I know that I'll be able to find parts for it. And ultimately you can have more fun. It's just like more fun per dollar. So I really enjoy the cheaper stuff. Like the Pimp My Ride van that I did, I loved that van. Like you do not, I would keep that van forever, but I think it needed like a kind of a bookend for that story.
What did you do with that thing?
So for those people that don't know, I bought a van that was in a Boston like some parts supplier yard or something. And yeah, there we go. And I ended up it was on the show Pimp My Ride. And I bought it, I believe, for $850, something like that. And it had everything in it. It just didn't work very good. And then I ended up spending like another $3,500 or $4,000 on parts, just like refurbishing everything. I fixed all the bodywork, redid the wheels, redid the interior, all that stuff. And then me and my friend Jared, we ended up road tripping it from my place in Florida to Tyler Hoover's place. And I gave it to him as a Christmas present.
That's fun. That is fun. I like it. Dude, you're fucking so smart. I swear to God. When you sent me pictures of the van when you bought it, when it was a hunk of shit, you texted mm-hmm. me, go, look what I bought. And I go, oh my God, he is going to re-pimp rides that were already once pimped. I was like, this is so fucking smart. And he found, this is a loophole in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Repimp my ride, and then it smashed. You smashed it. It did like 5 million views in like days, right?
Yeah, so I think the three episode series got something like 18-19 million views now, and it's like it's insane. Like I didn't anticipate anything like that. It did get number one on trending, which was crazy.
That's ridiculous.
Like, I didn't that was nuts.
That's so crazy. I'm so happy for you. You're doing things I can't do. I can't be jealous. I can when we talk to Doug next week, I'm jealous of Doug. Doug doesn't do anything I can't do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you actually do a thing that I have no hope of doing. So I can't be jealous of you at all. I can only be happy for you when you get number one on trending.
So well here's the thing. I can be jealous of myself, but it's weird because I don't, you know, like I expect things to do well. And then if they do well, I think, all right, this is doing a little too well. Like something's going to go wrong. Like somebody's going to find out that this is not as good as they think it is or something like that.
It's called imposter
syndrome. So I start like second guessing myself, and I don't know. I was on pins and needles that entire time. And then when it kept on getting views, I'm like, I like this doesn't seem right. I'm gonna get like a CPM that's like 50 cents or something. Like it's just, yeah. It ended up working out, but it's I've just been trying to get back a rhythm that sort of makes sense, and just understand what people want to see, because a lot of people for those people that watch that Pimp My Ride series, that's the first they've seen of my channel. So I'm like, okay, now what do you expect that I'm gonna do? Like, do you just think I'm gonna
do
this
forever?
Like, man, I don't know.
That's the problem with YouTube, is once they whatever reason they like you for, you then have to keep doing that. You can't do what you want to do if it's different than the reason that they came to you. You know what I mean? They like they like won't forgive you for that. You know, unless it's like, but you do this thing. You don't understand. I found you and I stayed because of this one thing you do. You can't do something else.
I mean, yeah, you can't possibly have any other interests or want to explore other options like that. That's no, you have to do the thing that I want you to do, because I'm not paying you any money, but my views are what matters.
But don't get boring on me.
Don't do too much of the same thing.
Right.
No.
Don't milk it. You definitely don't want to milk it. But also, I don't want just like one episode. I want to, you know, have a good pace, I don't know. Not too much, not too little, just right amount. And then just wait for my comment when you fuck up.
Have you done have you had a build recently that where the work involved in the build was not worth where the juice was not worth the squeeze? Forget the money in, money out of the car, but money in plus YouTube still not worth it. A huge bomb.
what ends up happening is with YouTube, it's like a It's almost like magic because you can monetize your misery. My engine blows up, that might be a good thing for me, you know, because I can say, okay, now we have to rebuild it, or now we have to replace it, or now, you know, this is something that we have to work on.
Otherwise, you have to keep buying more fucking cars. Otherwise, there's no end. Yeah. You need the cars you have to fuck up. That's a really good point.
No, it's nuts. I mean, the Bentley was actually like that. It took me 2 years to fix that. And it was on my lift for a good year, like literally just sitting there for a year collecting dust.
Oh, that's a waste.
Because I didn't
want to
touch
it.
Yeah.
I was just reading Jason Kamisa's like review thing of the new Bentley, and like he said the old one, the engine goes forward past the headlight housing. That's how far forward that engine is the front of the engine is past the headlight housing, which is insane.
It's such a weird car.
That's true. It goes into the headlight housing a fair bit. Like it is, but it's very Audi because Audis are like reverse Porsches. So Porsches have their stuff way out in the back. Audis is just like so nose heavy. It's not even funny, but it's a Bentley and you know, it weighs the same as a Range Rover. So I don't think that they really cared about handling all that much.
No, and they tell you that you shouldn't either. Curves are for the poor. You can go straight.
When you told me last year, I think it was the end of last year, might have been the beginning of this year, that you bought a crashed McLaren, I was like, finally, he is going to find something he can't fix. Because they build this thing... I've been to the factory. They build this thing in the Starship Enterprise with a bunch of crazy machines and crazy robots. And you, although it is a very nice shed with a very cool floor, have a shed.
Of course, yeah. Oh, so, no. That's not disparaging to me at all. I know that that's reality. But I actually just spent the last 2 days taking that car apart, just getting all the damage kind of looked at. And I'm pretty confident that I can get everything to work. It's not that bad. The problem is, the only issue is the fact that I was stupid and I had to get a 675 LT, which they only made 500 of in the world. So parts are a little hard to come by. Let's just say,
there's a lot of LT stuff that specific is like
specific
parts.
Yeah, to the 675 LT.
Like what?
So stuff that you wouldn't think, like I just realized, like this is going to be coming out in the video tomorrow. I just realized that I need a new front subframe.
Oh,
so
God.
The front subframe that's made of aluminum and it bolts on to the carbon tub, that got like in the accident, it got pushed up and one side is a good like 3/8 of an inch off from the other side. And you can't see it from like just looking at it. Like I have to measure it. And then I'm like, ah, crap. So I'm going to have to get another one of these. The entire rear frame section, I has to be replaced. So,
I mean,
that's fun. Yeah.
The sentence that starts with the entire rear frame section, like, wow, the whole thing, dude.
Is the does the powertrain work though?
So I don't know. Maybe. So this car has been. It was in salvage auctions for the last like 3 years, and it kept on going from person to person because they thought, oh, it only needs some bumpers and a hood or something, and I'll just sell it on for a profit.
It's
definitely not like that. It needed some like real big work. So what ended up happening was you can actually see this on I think it's Wrecked Exotics or something like that, like some website where they have all these things. And I mean, they don't have a ton of 675 LT crashes, but you'll see this one, and they have scenes from the accident. And the guy like went back first into a telephone pole, and he like took out a stop sign and stuff. It was nuts.
Crystal Lake, Illinois? Is it that one?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
It's the
bad.
Only red one there. Yep, that's it. That's my car.
How many miles were on it when it got wrecked out, you know?
7,000.
Oh, it's not bad.
The plastic on the carbon on the inside of the car is still there from the dealer.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious. Freddie, if you get all the parts in, right? Let's say you are able to somehow. This thing is so fucked. If you are able to somehow buy and gather all the parts necessary, can you put that car back together as tight as McLaren did it?
100%, even better. Like so, what's interesting with McLaren is that their cars are abnormally easy to take apart. Like it was a few hours and I got this thing down to like the carbon shell. Like
I wonder if that's race
car stuff. I
haven't
taken the engine out, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. Like I just got done doing it like an Audi R8 and a Bentley. Like this car is easy. It's like pretty dang easy.
Oh, cool. Well, that's a nice surprise. That's not something I would have expected. I don't know why. I don't know I had that impression.
The cars are so modular. They're just like, this is the cell that we use for everything. And you just bolt on different stuff.
I guess, yeah.
Is there a badge on the engine that says use for, and then it says MP4, comma, 675, comma, P1, comma. Like
it's like an old pizza box where they just cross out the ones that it's not. actually what happened with the engine is that since the guy went back first, the engine was, I mean, it hit the rear reinforcement bar. So that's like just completely caved in, but it also shot the engine and transmission about 3 inches forward, which means that it broke the axles got basically just punched. One of the turbos is broken. One of the engine mounts like snapped off from the block.
Whoa,
which is good,
dude.
So I'm going to have to figure that out.
What is that? I don't know. Forgive me, I'm not a mechanic. But if an engine mount snaps off of the block, can you put a new one on? How does that work?
So the way the engine mounts work in a McLaren, it's not like on, like usually on cars, it's like you have two engine mounts on either side of the engine.
Right.
With a McLaren, there's a trans mount that's on top of the transmission. And then there's like these three dog bones right in the middle, like right in the front of the engine. And they just hold it there kind of like a cradle. So when it got punched in, like the mount that the dog bone goes into, it just sheared off. It just like snapped right off. And what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to fill that with like aluminum weld. Then I'm going to have to re-drill that and then re-tap it. It's going to be just as strong as when it was new.
Is it just as strong as when it was new if you do that? Is that how aluminum weld works?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It all depends on what the metal like that they used. I don't know what, because aluminums, not all aluminums are the same. I'm not a master welder at all, but I know that if they have specific castings, they could take better to weld. It's just going to be like a trial and error thing. I mean, I'm not going to be like JB welding stuff on there, but I'm going to try to do it as factory as I can. I mean, if I took this car to McLaren, they'd be like, it's total write-off. We have to get you a new carbon tub and engine and stuff. But I'm doing what I can to like actually fix what's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, show people that this car looks really, really bad. And there is like, if you took it to a shop, this would be a $200,000 or $300,000 bill, but you can get it done with, let's say, a fraction of that cost, you know?
Do you actually think you will be able to come out of that one okay financially, considering what you need compared to what you thought you needed?
Well, here's the thing. My situation is a little novel. It's not normal, right? So if that engine blows again, if something happens and the transmission goes, mm-hmm. and I have to spend 10 grand getting one, that won't be such a hard hit because I can make money on YouTube and I can barely, I can basically break even over time. But with, if it's like, if I wanted to buy this and then fix it up and then flip it, I don't think I'd get my money back. But this is like a forever car for me. I've always loved the 625 LT. I think it's probably the best looking McLaren ever made next to the F1 and P1. So that's just my, like, I don't think I'd ever sell it, and especially what I'm doing to it. Like, it's going to be kind of a one of a kind car because I'm going to do a different color.
You're going to customize it a little faster.
Because
I like what you did with the Lambo. When you brought the Lambo to my shop, the interior came out really good on that car. Whoever did that did a nice job.
Yeah, that was E3 Customs. They did a fantastic job, and I wanted to make it look like more contemporary because the Mercy interior, it looks real low rent, man. Like, it looks so bad. Like, the Diablo interior, I love
the
because
end of
there's
the
so
Diablo.
Much going on. Yeah. It feels nice, but the Mercy, when you sit in it, it just feels like, well, it's an Italian car, and it's all the money is in the engine. So, like, I wanted it to feel special because the people outside you when you're in that car are having a better time than you are in that car,
Yeah, I do know what you mean. It's funny.
Is there some kind of test you can do once you build the new motor mounts that test the structural integrity of it? I mean, part of me is like, well, it would be seems risky to sell the car, not that you're going to, because you'd have almost a possible like liability situation because you are repairing
it's,
this crazy
it's
thing.
It's a complete liability, and that's one reason why I don't tend to sell cars like this. Like with a Bentley, it was different because that was a clean title car that just needed some maintenance,
right.
And some
de-Russification.
It didn't need anything. Yeah, like a de-Russian. Yeah, exactly. It's not anything where, like, with this is a crashed car. There's structural components that need changing. And what I'm doing, like, my channel, I've adopted the mantra of build it better because I've seen a lot of YouTubers that just do, like, okay, well, we're going to make the thing look good, and then we'll make it so the part bolts on, and then that's it. But they don't take into account, like, what happens when you get into a crash? Is this going to deform in the same way? Should I get this OEM? Should I get this new? Does the, if something is hit, does that mean the metal has fatigued to the point where it's no longer going to be, a crash structure? Like, all those things I take into account. And there's ways to do it where you can save some money, like getting, used body panels or something. But then, like, on stuff like airbags, like I would never do like an airbag delete or, like try to fool one of the sensors. Like I'd want all the safety systems to be 100%. I want to make sure that the structure, that holds the car, like the carbon tub, the rear and front subframes, those all have to be, as close to OEM stock as possible. No like superfluous welding. I don't want any, big, repairs on it or anything. So that's my like main concern, because if I'm showing this to other people, the last thing I want is for them to go, oh, well, you didn't do this, and like I wouldn't get in a car that you built or whatever. Like I want it to be a nice car because I'd like to drive it,
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between TV builds, right? you saw Pimp My Ride car, build only needs to serve one need, and there's a lot of ways you can cut corners if the whole goal is to just do something that looks good on TV or But if you're, you know, I was going to ask if, like, if you're really going to be driving this thing around, you've, you know, you've got your wife, you've got your new, but your new baby, Mazel Tov to that, you know, eventually, you know, you definitely want to, it would be sketchy as hell to be driving around in a 675 with janky subframes.
Yes.
Super sketchy.
You know what's weird? Like, I know a lot of people that, you know, drive very sketchy cars in a very sketchy way. And I always say, like, dude, you drive like you have no one in the world that loves you. Like, you drive like no one would miss you if you died. So,
that's a good point.
Like, just think about, like, what would happen if you just, you know, you took this car and you didn't, like, tighten the lug nuts, or you, like, you know, forgot to do this one thing that could just, you know, mean the difference between life and death. Like, that stuff really gets to me. And especially when I'm doing this for YouTube, that means that I have to show people, not necessarily, like, I'm not an OEM, you know, ASE certified or McLaren certified mechanic, but I'd rather have them, you know, see that I'm making an effort to make this as safe as possible and as, like, also as reliable and as dependable as possible, because I don't need this thing to just run for like 5 minutes and then, oh, okay, we're done, and then I just push it in the corner.
I feel you. I feel the same thing. I'm like, if I'm out driving in the canyons, I try to, you know, clearly be like, let's give this cyclist some room. Like, we're doing this at a responsible-ish time and place. Look how there's no people around. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if you're gonna be an example of some kind, even if it's mildly sketchy, you should still do the best you can to be as safe as you can while being sketchy.
Yeah. Pack your shoot well.
And I mean, like, that goes to, you know, the whole, like, cannonball run thing. You know, they're doing this incredibly, incredibly dangerous thing. But there is, like, an undertone of, we should probably do this when there's not too much traffic, like, not just for time reasons where, you know, they get a faster time, but also, you know, you don't want to potentially hurt somebody. And there's this weird, like, it's almost an honor among thieves type thing where you have people that engage in this activity, but you know that not everybody's going to understand. So you'll tone it down once you come across a normie. You know?
Yeah, no, I totally, because like, we talked to Ed Bolian last week, we're not involved in cannonball culture per se, but I certainly am a pseudo scholar of it, I think. And yeah, I think you're right. The honor among thieves thing is sort of interesting. And when the normies get involved, like, somebody on Twitter, I don't know who it was. It was like a normie said, you know, just had one of those. So I realized that people are doing COVID cannonballs, and they put a picture of Ed Bolian in front of his, like, Ferraris, like, with his arms out like this. And they're like, and this is their guy. And of course he's their guy, because look at him. And I was like,
just look at him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, man, I guess if you try and rationalize this to someone who's not into it or doesn't really understand the nuances of it, it really sounds horrible. Yeah. It really sounds really,
no,
really
bad. I know. I mean, it's one of those things where I actually got a good sort of wake up call with this, because we were talking about Car Trek to YouTube, and you know, we're trying to get season 2 off the ground, and what they essentially said is that they're not interested in the car space. Like, so I don't think that most people, or at least, you know, most, like, mainstream
who's they?
I'm sorry, YouTube. Like, as far as, like, making a, you know, like, making, like, a YouTube original or some, like, premium content with cars.
I am not entirely surprised. Car content is expensive, and it's niche. Even car content that is as mainstream as it can be, and I think I watched some of Car Trek, and I think that's pretty mainstream stuff. It's entertaining. It's the same kind of vibe as Top Gear, and I think, you know, unless you really did something where it was a completely different show set against the backdrop of cars, it's a tough one because it's just like, when we're in this car world, it feels like a big world, but when you're outside it, it's fucking small. It's so small. Like, the
well,
car,
what Yeah. One of the interesting things is like, go try and comment on like a mainstream YouTuber's comment section and see how quickly you just disappear. Like, it doesn't matter if you have like a million or 5 million or 10 million subscribers, like nobody knows who you are.
That's hilarious. I haven't ever done that, but if I want to be put in my place soon, I really should. Yeah. Explore.
Yeah. 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 Of course. But I like when I think about stuff like this, it's like Top Gear was one of the biggest shows in the world, and that was a car show. And I think it was less of a car show and more about, you know, the camaraderie between them and the adventures and whatnot. And I think that's why people watched it. So I mean, that's what we try to do with Car Trek, maybe to you know, too far of a degree where we're just kind of, you know, trying to not rip them off, but just trying to like pay homage to the heyday of Top Gear. So, I mean, that was a lot of fun. I loved the Car Trek experience, but I can understand why people are put off by it because it involves cars so much. But I also think that cars are such a big part of our culture that we don't understand, like most people don't think about it, but they're like, you know, it's some people's first like sense of freedom. You know, it's their sense of individuality. It's how they express themselves. It's, you know, where you go when you first break up. It's where, you know, you go when you first get lucky. You know, like there's lots of ways that you could have good experiences, like good, like lifelong experiences in cars that people don't really think of. And, you know, to just relegate it to, oh, well, we're just, you know, car people. That I think that sort of sells it short a little bit, you know?
Totally right. I think that you can have a show that is a travel show or a people show set against the backdrop of cars.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that could be done again. I think one of the things and that really helped Top Gear was that because of the BBC and how that works, that system, not relying on advertisers, you know, and in the early days, they were just sort of like, oh, well, it's just like the BBC has a car show and this is it. And they're doing their thing. You know, they got like five or six seasons worth of what we would consider basically practice, where people just like left them alone, gave them a budget, and they just went out and did it. And then by the time like someone all of a sudden turned around and paid attention, it had gotten very good. And it had gotten very good in, I think, a lot of ways because of what they were able to pull into it from the outside world in terms of culture and references and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's I remember, like, every time I build a Lego set, like, you'll see the Lego sets behind me.
Yeah, dude, you get the Aston Martin James Bond one yet, the DB5?
Oh, yeah. I got that up there. I have a Lamborghini Gallardo. I have two Porsches. I have the RSR, the GT3 RS. I just ordered the new Lamborghini, the Cyan.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that
one. Or the Cyan or whatever.
Cyan, I believe.
Called. Yeah.
I just got Aston DB5 that has like all the James Bond like shit that comes out of it. It's fucking crazy.
It's really cool. Chris Fix actually gave me a little Caterham. So that was pretty cool. It has like jack stands and everything.
Have you seen the guys on the internet that have new instruction manuals for existing kits? So you can get this new manual for the GT3 RS and build a Lancia Stratos out of the same kit that actually looks more like a Lancia Stratos than the GT3 RS does a GT3 RS.
The GT3 RS is a very ugly kit.
Like, I know, it's not good.
It does not look good. The Bugatti, though, the Chiron looks really good.
Yeah, that one's cool. I got that one, too.
the GT3 is just all sorts of wonky. But there are people that make their own instructions. There's like a P1, you can make a Koenigsegg, all this stuff. The problem is you have to get the specific bricks. Like I've heard of the people that like repurpose existing kits. So that's really cool. But like the really one-off custom, you have to order the bricks yourselves. And there's no easy way to do that. Yeah. So you have to have like essentially a big Tupperware tub full of what you hope are the right parts, and then you'll have to order them piecemeal, and it's like 3,600 pieces, you know. So
it'll take you years. It just takes so
exactly.
Long.
It'll take you years, and then whatever.
It's gangster though. I love it. Where were we? Where did we go? How do we end up on Legos? I forget. Oh,
I don't know. I don't know. But I'm building a McLaren, and that's a lot of fun. And I'm spending a lot of money, and it's very expensive.
Are you you get stressed out about it yet, or is it just is what it is? The cost of doing business.
Not really. The only thing that stressed me out was the front subframe, because that was something I didn't want to. I didn't think was a thing because it didn't really suffer a major hit in the front. But what ended up happening was when the car rode up on its front right tire, like it bottomed out so hard that it bent the front subframe and the suspension, which is it's like a hydro pneumatic suspension. It has this like a nitrogen infused shock. And the shock exploded. So that, like, when you saw the pictures from when it crashed, you'll see that the fender is ballooned out. And I was thinking, like, why that happened? And that's because the suspension is at, like, 1,750 PSI.
Oh, wow.
So imagine all that pressure. Like, yeah. You hit something and it just, boom!
Oh, my God. That's probably amazing.
So that's what happened there.
Yeah, it's like a scuba tank going off. That'd be crazy.
Yeah. That's for sure. Gnarly. I mean, it's insane. It's an insane amount of pressure.
That car is trashed. How much did you pay for that piece of shit? Do you mind if
I
ask?
So I got it for 80. I got it for 80, and then I spent another 40 or so on parts. I think I'm still about 15 shy on parts. So I'm going to be into it like 135. Factor in paint work. That's going to be another, let's say, 5 to 10. So, I mean, I'll be into it less than 150.
That'd be incredible.
And this car will be like completely sorted.
That would be incredible. What color are you going to do?
It wouldn't be bad. I mean, plus it's fun, you know, like completely taking apart one of these cars and seeing how it works and then putting it back together and hoping it works again.
Anything super disappointing in there engineering wise?
The thing that's disappointing is the paintwork. McLaren's paintwork is garbage. Like it is, I always thought that, okay, these, you know, these are really high dollar cars, so they're going to have the best paintwork. Dude, the way that they tape stuff off is worse than like a Mako paint job in some areas. It is horrible.
Wow.
There are a few people that have complained about McLaren's quality, as far as their paintwork. What happens is they don't rust, but the aluminum underneath the paint, it starts oxidizing and it bubbles up. So it looks like your McLaren, your like brand new McLaren that's, you know, that you had for only a few years is rusting, and McLaren does not cover that.
Oof.
Whoa.
That's not good. Yeah, that's probably not so good.
No, and it's and one of the things I learned is that let's say you want to get a volcano red or volcano orange or, you know, some MSO paint code. First off, it is incredibly hard to match that color. And second off, McLaren will not give that paint code to anybody other than a McLaren approved body shop. Ugh. So you can try to look it up. It's not out there.
So your repaint will have to be in a non-McLaren color. Is that what you're saying?
Which is fine because literally nobody knows the difference.
Yeah. So. Do you know, is the color a surprise or have you decided on a color yet?
I have not decided on a color. I'm thinking it's probably going to be somewhere like it might be a Lamborghini color, like a Rosso, you know, it's a red Rosso something. I can't remember what it is. Like one of the Aventador SVJ colors.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, it could be something else. I don't know. Like, I've been looking at greens. Like, a British Racing Green actually looks pretty cool.
Ooh, British Racing Green.
Like, I can literally do anything I want at this point because it's just, yeah. You know, I have to replace everything and repaint everything.
I'll put a vote in for British Racing Green if you blast the wheels in a gold. That could be hot.
Gold or like a hyper silver, like a whitish silver. Those also look good because they pop.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I'm going to have to repaint the calipers.
Oh, what color are the calipers?
Right now they're polished, so they're like a metal, you know, metal finish. So they're polished calipers, which is like an upgraded thing from MSO. I don't know. I can paint them.
Are they salvageable?
For $4,000, we'll take the paint off the caliper.
Exactly. So the brakes actually are perfect. So the carbon ceramic brakes that cost $13,000 to replace, they're good. So I don't have to worry about that.
That's good. The I just drove that Gunther Works thing, that crazy Porsche, and the one I drove had had steel brakes, like some you know, I think they're made by AP Racing or something, and they have an upgrade for McLaren Senna brakes, and they are $30,000.
So the guy that I bought my battery from. By the way, buying McLaren batteries isn't as easy as going to your AutoZone or Advanced Auto Parts and getting a battery. You have to get them either used in good condition or at the dealer for $3,500. So I got mine used and it was $1,300.
Oh my God.
And I got it from like a guy on the forums, you know?
That's so crazy, but, man.
How did we get here?
Senna brakes.
Okay, so Senna brakes. I'm sorry. So the guy that I got my battery from, he develops like aftermarket. His company is called XPRD. He develops like aftermarket stuff for McLarens, and he has Senna brakes on his car, and he's doing like a center knockoff conversion for his car. And like, honestly, center brakes aren't actually that expensive because I mean, figure they put them on like 600 LTs. Like,
well, no, wait, hang
cars,
on.
They're like,
cause Gunther guys said, and look, I don't have the technical expertise to question what they said in this matter, but maybe you do. So maybe you can tell me. They said that the regular McLaren ceramic brakes, like all ceramic brakes, are pressed carbon, like plywood, right? Whereas the Senna's brakes are hand layered, and they take a really long time to make, and they're made by hand, and that's why they're so expensive. Is that not what you've heard? Have you heard something different than that?
I don't know. I'm not going to say that's wrong. That's he definitely knows more than I do about the center brakes. They're not cheap. I'm not saying they're cheap, but $30,000. There's a little bit of markup there.
Maybe
I don't think that's they're giving you the at cost price.
Yeah, it's probably a good point. $30,000 markup on a Gunther Works as an option. So they're probably like 15 to buy the parts. That makes sense.
Yeah, I would say 15 to 20, something like that. But
that's crazy, though.
Whether it's worth it over like regular carbon ceramics, you're not going to see that at all. Like, you could track that thing all day. Like, those brakes are totally fine.
Well, that's what the dude said was, I said, this car weighs 2,500 pounds. What could you possibly need that type of braking force for? And he goes, well, this one customer bought this car to keep it at his house at thermal, and all he's going to do is run laps around the track. And he basically said this car can do a lifetime of track days on this set of brakes.
Yeah, if they're similar to the P1's brakes, theoretically will never wear out because it's such a hard like silicon carbide.
That's crazy.
So I'm sure the Senna is then the next generation.
Yeah,
of that.
It's crazy. It's fucking technology.
But then again, I mean, is that a practicality thing? You're really saving money because if you go to the track every day, like I understand that, but if you go to the track, like a lot of people that go to the track, they're converting to steel because they're wearing out their brake pads and they don't want to, have a $13,000 bill at the end of the month,
But what if they were lifetime? What if they never had a bill? In theory, I don't know if it really is lifetime. If it is lifetime,
I am very wary of any car company saying lifetime anything.
There's no
such thing as lifetime. I mean, you had the million mile Lexus. There's nothing on that car that's lifetime.
No, but remember sealed transmissions? That was the biggest bullshit.
Oh, lifetime fluid.
Lifetime trans fluid. My fucking ass, bro.
Yeah.
How is my Lexus?
Yeah, the Bentley had that. The Bentley had the sealed transmission, but the way you had to do the transmission fluid change and check is like you had to stick this like specialized pipe into the sump, wait for it to get like above 80 degrees but below 87 degrees Celsius, and then like start pumping until it starts dripping like once per second, and then you have to time it. It's so stupid. It's like chicken entrails or something. Like, why can't you just have a dipstick? What's wrong with that?
It's and all of that for just like an automatic. I mean, it's just an automatic. Yeah. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like,
it's just a regular automatic that they put in every Audi in the 90s. Like, it's the same one.
Yay, exotic cars. made of, yeah, exotic cars are made of exotic parts, everybody.
No, definitely not. What's interesting is that the McLaren actually is, they do make like a lot of their parts, and a lot of their parts are only from McLaren. The funny thing is, when you order a part from McLaren, the part number has nothing to do with anything. Like, you might as well just be like, I don't know, just there's no list of part numbers that will get you the part you need, because they changed years. Like, they had split years, they had different versions of things, like in between the same like model of car.
Oh my God.
They had two different steering racks on the 12C. They had two different subframes. They had 8mm or 10mm bolts, and they all had different part numbers, and nobody knows what the actual official part numbers are. So what they do is they go to the McLaren like parts diagram, and then they just point to it. They go, "Is this what you need?"
Oh,
and then you go,
God.
"Uh-huh." And then you just order that.
That's crazy. That's like, you know, Tesla does, you know, all these like updates, right? Oh, well, we don't need to have major model changes because we're constantly updating our models. Fucking nobody mm-hmm. knows what they have. No one knows what's in any of these cars, and there's no real way to find out. They have all these, some have updated parts, some don't, have old versions of shit, new versions of shit, and when you buy one used, there's like no way to tell what you've got. It's crazy.
You know Rich, right? Rich Benoit?
Rebuilds? Yeah. He just bought a Taycan. Good for him. What a fucked Taycan.
Did he buy that, or did he just make a video on it? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I thought he bought it, but I don't know. Maybe
he bought it. I don't. He's always doing some crazy crap. But so he has a shop called Electrified Garage up in the Boston area, and I talked to his techs there, and like what they tell me about these Teslas is like just hilarious, because there's so many different versions, and that like the fixes that they do is, you know, they know that there's a problem with Teslas like eating axles. So what the later models did is like they just put a little bracket so they don't vibrate as much. And then like when they just hope that they don't come in for warranty, or like they hope they don't realize how badly they're vibrating. So
oh
it's
God.
there's a lot of sketchiness going on in a lot of these OEMs.
Jesus, that's all fun. How's my Lexus?
Your Lexus is good. So what I'm planning to do on that is just completely restoring it. So I'm gonna take out the engine, do a complete reseal, and then probably take it to the body shop and make it as new as I can, while retaining, like, I'm gonna try to repair what I can instead of replacing things, just because, you know, it has mileage on it and it has history.
Cool.
So I mean, what I want to do with it is maybe I'll probably end up giving it to a museum. I'll end up like driving across the country, or, you know, like we'll do something fun.
If you
definitely not going to destroy it. I think it deserves to live on.
If you restore it and you want something to do with it, and you want to drive it back cross country to me, I'll put it on display at Westside for a while, and then we'll see if maybe like the Peterson wants it or something. But I'll take it back.
So I was talking to the Peterson, and they said that what they do is they would try to give it to their employees to try to break the record, which is like 3 million miles.
So bro, I said, that's hey, fucking stupid. There's no one's going to do that. Do you know how long it took me to put 100,000 miles on that car? It took me 4 years to put 100K on that car. There is no way they're putting 2 million more miles on it. That's dumb. Whoever thought of that has not done
the
math.
Listen, man, I don't know. I told them good luck, but
yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not my dream to, I'm not about to shit on their vision.
Well,
you know?
Look, bro, if you want to restore it and give it to me for fucking Christmas, I'll take it back. I'll give you a dollar for it. You gave me a dollar for it.
That'd be cool. Yeah, we can do that. I have no problem with that.
Cool. We got a lot of questions from the people. You want to do? Let's do half an hour of questions to wrap this here show up.
What do the folks
have to say, Zach?
Real quick, we got some people saying awesome content. Thanks for making content. Thanks for just doing stuff, some donations. So thank you all for that. And Carl Vogel says, bring along Jared next time. I do not understand that reference.
Oh, on the show?
Yeah. Oh, so
that's your, I think it's.
So Jared is my, Jared is the partner in my other channel, Wrench Every Day. And he also does a ton of stuff.
We
on,
met Jared.
On
we
my
did.
Channel.
When we went to Florida, we met Jared.
The man of many voices.
Yes.
Yes.
I forgot.
No, that was Andrew.
Oh yeah, that was Andrew. Sorry. My bad.
That was Andrew and Jared. Jared is the other guy that works with me. He works with me now. Totally awesome dude. And he was a professionally trained mechanic for Toyota, and he's like one of the best people I know. He's like my best friend. So yeah,
nice. All right, so Ryukachu asked, Freddie, there's been a vocal minority of fans begging you to do an electric hot rod or swap project. Is that happening, and what car would you choose to do it with?
I've been thinking about this. I have a 1991 Honda Beat. It's like a little K car that I imported from Japan.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of doing an EV swap with like some little people mover, or like maybe even a Zero motorcycle. That would work pretty well, because that car can't really go that fast, and its limiting factor is gearing. So if I get something that's in that, yeah, there we go. That's what my Beat looks like, except mine is silver.
I like the phone dials. The phone dial wheels are super cool on that.
Yeah, yeah. Mine, I think, has hubcap, just regular whatever steelies, but it was $800. So,
really? Wow, awesome.
You know, I didn't really care.
EV swap would be really, really cool,
Considering it's mid-engine, rear-wheel drive, and, you know, it's just like you don't really see them.
Be quick. Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
All right, Maester 101 mm-hmm. says, what is the worst vehicle that you could feasibly convince someone you hated to buy?
I wouldn't try to convince anybody to buy anything they didn't want, but let's see. Maybe an Audi A6 2.7T, just something like that, where it's like, hey, it's a really good deal and it has all these features, and then it's only leaking a little bit of oil, you know, that's fine.
It's all
30 valves go.
Right.
2.7T. Yeah. Oof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A Cadillac Escalade. My dad has a Cadillac Escalade, and it is an extraordinary piece of shit. Absolutely extraordinary.
What year is it?
18, maybe. I think it's an 18.
Really?
It's fucking junk.
And it's bad. I mean, it's a two-year-old car.
Everything is broken on it. From the day it was new, everything broke on it. The seat heaters turn on their own all the fucking time, front and back seats. The electronics are crazy. Things fall off it. It's a steaming pile of shit. And the sticker price on it was $97,000. He paid $65,000.
But does your dad like it, though?
No, he hates it. He cannot wait to get the fuck get out of it. It's
okay.
I think
30K on the hood, and it still is terrible. Mm-hmm. It's still not even as satisfying.
Just instant buyer's remorse.
Instant. It's just junk.
If I hated someone, I would convince them to buy like a just coming off warranty used yellow X2.
Oh, God. Like, wow, you've really gone there.
It said someone you hate.
Launch color.
Someone you hate.
The launch color X.
The unsellable color is yellow. You can't resell it ever. And it would just be falling apart.
Yellow crossover? Oh, God. Mm-hmm. The marketing team has failed.
All right. Rick Schifrin says he has a Mark 7 GTI. He's looking at an STI, a Civic Type R, or Golf R next. Is the performance of the others worth what he says is a quality sacrifice?
A Golf R was included in there, and that's the same.
Yeah.
So is the performance of the others worth a quality sacrifice? An STI and a Civic Type R are not meaningfully quicker than a Golf R. They might be a second a lap or something like that, but in your average life on a canyon road, those cars all go the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
So you should buy them.
Are we talking about like manual... For manual, are they all like, do they have the DSGs?
I don't think he was even being that specific. I just basically think if he's used to Volkswagen quality, is it a step down to go into a Subaru or a Honda? I don't think really.
It might be a considerable step up depending on what Volkswagen we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. I think the Civic Type R has really good seats. Really nice seats. And so that's a thing always worth considering in a car. But, I mean, they all perform fundamentally the same. So you should buy the one that makes you the happiest to sit in a traffic jam.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what car do you think is going to prolong that sense of, you know, like whenever you get a car, there's a time where you're sort of over it, like that the honeymoon phase is over. Whatever car you have that will give you the longest honeymoon phase, I think that's the car you probably get. And then after a while, you just get used to it. And then, you know, you can maybe modify it. All those cars you can modify. You know, just enjoying the car for what it is, I think that's probably whichever one you can do the most, that's the one you get.
That's a good philosophy. I like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Greg Howard says he's looking at mid-sized trucks, planning to do some decent off-roading, so the Ridgeline is out. Is there anything we don't like about the Ranger other than it being on a really old platform?
Yeah, there's a few things I don't like about the Ranger. The Ranger's seats are not very comfortable. They're not the one I drove anyway. It has a 10-speed automatic, which I'm not a fan of.
Too
when
many.
Combined with a turbocharged engine, it's just always hunting for torque, always. And it feels like a 2010 Fusion inside, basically.
It does. It feels a bit like a car inside, which makes it comfortable ergonomically compared to a Tacoma or something. I do like the size of it. I like the engine.
I'd probably go Colorado before Ranger right now.
So, I mean, why wouldn't you get like an older, like something that's a little bit bigger, like an older F-150? It's going to drive a little better. You'll have probably a transmission with not as many gears, which is arguably better.
Good point.
And it'll, you know, it'll have probably just the same features, and, you know, it's a work truck. So, you know, it's a little heavier. So maybe the ride will be a little better. I don't know.
That's true. I mean, if you're looking at new Rangers, you could get a used F-150 for probably similar money. I mean, it has to be a couple years down, but I guess it just depends on how big the trail you're going to be on, you know, because an F-150 is a big truck. Especially a newish one.
Yeah.
If you're doing like Jeep trails or
they're
something.
They're real big now.
That's too big.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit too big for that.
Yeah.
Get a used Tacoma.
I did Moab with a crew cab Raptor. And man, that thing was high centering on everything.
Exactly.
Suboptimal. Yeah.
I
would say Colorado over Ranger personally. But yeah, if you're not doing hard, he said Ridgeline's out. The Ridgeline's the one nobody wants. It's not manly enough. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big Ridgeline fan.
Yeah,
I think the Ridgeline rules.
Yeah.
What else you got?
MB Frenchie says, is it possible to manual swap a Gran Turismo?
A Maserati Gran Turismo?
Yeah.
What do you think, Freddie?
Anything's possible. But one of the cars that I've been looking at is a Maserati Coupe GT. And those are manual. So it essentially has the same engine, that 4.2 liter Maserati. So you can take the transmission out of that. Probably have to make your own mounts, make your own torque tube because the transmission's in the back. And I think you can get it done, but you know, you're going to have to defeat stuff on the ECU, which is all doable, but then is it really, really worth it? I mean, you can buy like an Aston Martin V8 Vantage and that's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, or like a DB9, like you could, DB9s they make in manual.
Yeah.
They're hard to find, but like that would be a better car in every way and it would tick all the boxes that the Gran Turismo would tick.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's probably possible if Freddie says it is, but diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially because the interior,
you've driven the Scuderia with manual swap. Like everything is good except for like a few things, like the ABS doesn't work and, you know, it's not dialed in like you would want it to be. You know, it's not like factory fresh.
Yeah.
And to get it that last 5 or 10%, that takes so much time.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think diminishing returns.
What is our guilty pleasure vehicle? Something that we have absolutely no reason to like. Like what vehicle would you be ashamed to like?
Things
except
that I have no reason to like, but I have no shame about liking any vehicle.
That's an interesting question because it assumes that you have some sort of like you're insecure about something.
Yeah.
You know? Like you have this, like, I hope nobody notices that I'm listening to Barbie Girl by Aqua. Like, who cares? If you like it, you like it.
That's a great pull. I like that you pulled out Barbie Girl by Aqua. It's a little too close to the tip of the tongue there, Freddie.
No, we know he's listening to it, but that's okay.
Well, listen, Listen.
In your Honda Beat, do you just have that CD on repeat? Fucking Honda Beat.
I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm just staring at, you know, the CD case right now, but you know, I'm not going to also not say that.
I agree. I agree with you totally. I ride a scooter around. I ride a lime green Vespa around. I have a silly van. I have a pink Porsche. There's almost nothing I'd be ashamed to drive.
I think the thing for me is, like, once I crossed over into totally liking minivans for the task that, like, of moving people and gear and driving them.
Yeah.
And when younger people usually, like, minivans are super lame. You're like, no, they are comfortable and quiet, and they transport people like a plane.
Yeah.
That's what you want in vehicles sometimes. Like, that's fine. And I know the image is boring.
No, a great minivan is great.
Yeah.
A great minivan is great. Oh, here's, all right, here's one. I'm not embarrassed at all by this, but you want to talk about a car that I probably should hate, and yet I had a great time driving? A donk. Donks are stupid, objectively. Even though they are an expression of a culture, and they're pretty fun to watch cruise around Miami Beach. And I drove a donk for a half an hour for a bit for TV, and it was all the fun I thought and hoped it could be. It was hysterical. Everyone should experience what it's like to drive around South Beach in a donk. It's hysterical.
They have a few of those in Florida. I'd love to get my hands on one, but the problem is they're kind of like kit cars in that they are so expensive. Like, people think that they're worth like gold. You know, that it's like, oh, this has 35-inch wheels, and that means that the car's worth $40,000. Like, no, that it doesn't. It's like it's a Cutlass Sierra that needs like a bunch of stuff.
Rob Ferretti bought a donk, and it did not go well for him financially, although it was very funny for the rest of us.
Did he get that sign fixed yet?
I don't know. What's wrong? Oh, his sign at Gotham? What was wrong with his sign?
Oh, so you didn't. So Gotham, he had the Gotham Dream Car sign. He made a new one, and it said Gotham, like when the guy made it, it just said Gotham Dream Car.
Oh,
right.
God.
And he's like, dude, where's the S? So then the guy just sticks the S like right on the end of
Get
car.
The
so
fuck
the S
out
is like falling off. And it's the most hilarious thing ever. And it's been like that for a few months.
Wait, scroll down, find the sign, Zach. I'm sure Rob's. Is that it right there? Oh,
he made a T-shirt out of it. It is hilarious.
It's so funny. The guy just stuck a fucking S on there. You know what? I got just as bad. Look at this. If I stand up, my first tattoo, which is ghetto as fuck.
Uh-huh.
It's ghetto as hell. It's right on my calf here. And it's an Ankh with some writing in it. And the dude didn't like fucking stencil it out properly. And so he left like a centimeter when he was done with the word he wrote. And he literally just put an asterisk there.
What?
It's the word that I wanted. It was the name of my boat. It was called Kilulu, and it's the name of my boat. But then there's just a centimeter at the end of it. He just put a fucking asterisk there. And
did he mean to put more information down at
exactly,
the bottom?
He meant to space it out a little further, but he didn't fucking gap it properly. He freehanded
the
thing.
Is there a footnote somewhere?
Exactly. A reference.
Footnote at your actual
right, exactly. Double.
And I was like 16 when I got it in the East Village. So I didn't even know I could call him out and be like, hey, you fucked my shit up. Like, I was like, I have a tattoo. Asshole. That sign brought me right back to that shitty tattoo parlor. That's so terrible. Geez. Rob, send me a shirt. I want that shirt.
His post says he's only doing one run to commemorate the sign that apparently is getting changed that never should have been. So good.
That's such a Ferretti sign. It's so perfect. Mm-hmm. One more, Zach, before we get out of here.
Yeah, one more. Fellstone Nick says, he just says, if we want a custom order lists of Lego parts, use a company called or a website called BrickLink.
Oh.
And you can upload your parts list, and anyone with instructions will give you an instruction file.
Oh, there you go. How cool.
Cool. Good to know. Very, very nice.
Lego nerds unite. Lego nerds. Have you gone down? There's got to be some fucking rabbit hole of like Lego forums. I have not explored them.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had time for that. But like there's every time you go down anything like this, like, hey, I wonder if this has a forum. And then you realize that it's in this entire world that you've been missing. Mm-hmm. And like there are people that live, eat and breathe this stuff. And you're like, I'm sort of out of my depth here. Like I'm a little I'm a little underqualified.
Yeah. What do you got coming up in the next couple of months? Can you talk about the shitbox that you texted me the other day? Is that public yet?
It's sort of public. I think I put it on Twitter now. So I bought a 93 Civic that is a Bugatti Veyron kit car.
It's hilarious.
What a bunch of articles and stuff.
So I'm going to see how
dude,
bad it is.
So sad.
And I wager it's very, 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 very bad.
It's so sad looking. It's like droopy dog. That's it. That's it right there. Second photo from the left. If you go to images, that's it. Yeah. It's so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a droopy dog.
Dude, I mean, look from like 50 feet, like that's the real thing. That's it. That's it right there.
When he sent me these pictures, I started laughing very hard.
This is incredible.
But then I had an idea. I thought, what if you took this and, you know, you did the big motor, the turbo. It's a Civic. It's an EG, right? I think it's an EG. It's a 93 Civic. You, mm-hmm. What if you started from here and turned it into a time attack car from this point?
It'd be funny.
I think it'd be hilarious.
Well, drag race of Veyron in it.
It would, but it would be so bad at what it does. Like it'd be so. First of all, the fiberglass kit is just put on with tech screws everywhere. I don't think you can get to any sort of appreciable speed with that kit without having major parts of it fall off.
You gotta find out. You gotta find out. I'll find out. I got a helmet. I'm serious. I'll put an engine in it. I'll go as fast as it'll go. We'll see what comes off.
So my whole idea was I was going to do a shot for shot remake of the Top Gear top speed test of the Veyron. So when they take it to, you know, 250 or whatever, I'll take it to whatever the top speed of this, probably like 85 or whatever this thing is.
It's so ugly, dude. It's the ugliest car ever.
It looks like a movie.
Yeah. So it's a car that I wouldn't mind destroying. And I usually have a lot of mechanical sympathy. Like I don't like to destroy anything, but this is a car that I think kind of needs to go away.
I wouldn't be hurt if it died a tragic death. It's so.
I don't think anybody would. Yeah.
It's like if you took if you made a candle that looked like a Veyron and then put it in the microwave for like 10 seconds. It's like
no. It's when mom says we have Bugatti Veyron at home.
There you go. That was good.
That's a good meme. That was very good. That's awesome. What do you want to plug? Obviously, Tavarish on YouTube. What else?
Yeah, I mean, the show Car Trek. You know, just go check it out. It's really cool. We spent a lot of time and effort on it. And that,
right
that's,
at the top
that's
of the Tavarish YouTube,
on YouTube
channel. If you just go there,
if people like it, feel free to subscribe. If they don't, feel free not to. You know.
Like and subscribe, folks. Thanks, dude. Congratulations on the new baby. I look forward to visiting when we can come places again.
Anytime, man.
And take care of my Lexus. Bring it back to me eventually once it's mint. I'd love to see it. Oh, yeah. Actually, I don't. I'd like to have it back if it was. I don't really give a shit. Whatever you want to do with it, have fun. If you want to give it back to me,
we will figure something out that will make sense and it'll be good. It'll be good. I'll treat her nice. I'll do right by you, Matt.
All right. These hoes ain't loyal. Thank you, Freddie Tavarish Hernandez. Tomorrow for the live, folks, Thursday, June 4th, Craig Lieberman is calling in. He's our friend who is doing a Fast and the Furious movie cars behind the scenes YouTube channel now, and it is his perfect avenue. He's doing very well, actually. His videos are getting a lot of traction. So he's calling in, and the Doug Show from Monday, we have rescheduled to Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Doug DeMuro. Thursday, 4 p.m., Craig Lieberman. Friday, 4 p.m., Doug. Thank you, Freddie. I appreciate your time, sir. Ride out that storm in good safety.
Thank you.
Keep those shit boxes flowing. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally, something to say. Good night, everybody.